Blog Talk Radio.
All right, here we are. With all due respect, that is the name of the show. A couple of dudes, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, talking about things that matter. Some things don't matter, but we talk about them anyway, and that is, makes it all the more interesting. Jim Ellis here on the West Coast. We got Rick Wright on the East Coast. How you doing there, Ricky?
Jimmy, I'm doing well. I'm doing well on the East Coast. Things are good. I'm excited for today's show. And how are you doing, man? How's things?
Oh, things are rough. Yeah, just going through something right now. But it's one of those matters that you can't really talk about publicly because everything can be used against you in this day and age. You know, if somebody's upset at something, you can't send an email, you can't communicate. It's got to be all through third-party stuff. It's a sad world, man. That's why I so appreciate our men's circle, our men's organization, where on the men's team, you just go direct, you know, you direct man-to-man. Deal with it, get support around it. A third party is the best way to fuck up a relationship. It's even in my latest book about communication. Just bring in a third party.
Okay.
They'll even get paid for it sometimes. Anyway.
So you wrote about it. Can you elaborate on what that was all about?
In the book.
Was it all legal? Arbitration, sports type stuff? What was it?
Well, I was thinking when I wrote about it. You mean when I wrote about it for the book I wrote?
Yeah. Huh?
Oh yeah. So for my book called HUH? I wrote about the and it's all about miscommunication. It's like how to miscommunicate. So if you ever want to screw up a relationship or miscommunicate with your loved one, all you need to do is not talk directly to them. Make sure to bring in a third party because we all know how that telephone game works. It doesn't take very long before. I mean, it's hard enough to get a clear communication one-on-one with someone. All you need to do is bring at least one other person in to make sure it doesn't get clear. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's mediation that might help diffuse emotions and things like that. However, all you got to do is bring in a mutual friend and talk behind their back, and then that have that get to become gossip. That'll screw things up. And the other one is lawyers. They get paid for people not being able to communicate. You know, family law and all that. They build giant buildings in honor of miscommunication, and we all have to go there because we can't talk one-on-one. So anyway, one-on-one, honorably, with care. Magic. Anything else? Fuck. Anyway.
Yeah. And why do you think that is nowadays?
Oh, because because of the lack of responsibility on people. They want to be victims. There's a lot of lawsuits because they want to be victims. They want to get something for free. And so now everyone's covering their ass. You can't even have regret. You can't even say, you know what? Hey, I regret. You know, I made a mistake. Ooh. You made a mistake. So there's this gigantic consequence that pounds on people in the form of lawsuits and family law. You can't even be human and make a mistake because if you admit to that mistake, then that can be held to your detriment. Instead of it being, you know, somebody treating it with consideration and honor, if you say you regret or have, you know, some regrets or you made a mistake, they take it and they use it against you. It's that's what's happening nowadays. Everyone's covering their ass.
Wow.
Have you seen that?
You know what? I don't deal, you know, I'm a landlord. So there's, you know, the only thing I deal with is usually tenant landlord court.
Oh, okay.
I did have one slip and fall so far. Sort of eventually as the landlord if you have a certain number of units, it's sort of par for the course. So, but I don't really have to deal with that. Because, you know, the insurance company deals with it. So I don't really have to, you know, I don't really have to deal a lot with that. But I can just see, I can see it and feel it. Like when I see people talking to each other, like you brought up, like the people like to act like victims. And I really am present to people just not taking responsibility for themselves. and blaming someone else or putting their, you know, whatever they're not getting on somebody else or somebody else's fault.
Right.
And, you know, it's a shame. And I don't see what I did see when I was leaving, when I left corporate, 12, 13 years ago, it was just starting then with emails. And I couldn't believe how frustrating it was when people would just throw people under the bus and like copy all these bosses. And like, I was like, holy shit. And like some of it wasn't even like, and I remember I became a victim of like one time when I was like in a meeting, you know, I had no corporate etiquette at all. And I just confronted the dude right at the meeting and say, oh, but the meeting's over. I said, well, hang on a second. I just want to just talk about that email with this one guy who said that my team did this and we didn't, you know? So what do you have to say about that, you know, dick? And he like looked at me like, oh, like how dare you like even like bring it out in this meeting? I'm like, well, where else am I going to do it? I'm going to just go back and forth with some stupid emails. And I knew that was the beginning of the end for me in corporate. And but yeah, so that's what I've seen of it. But it's a shame. So it sucks.
Yeah, I think it also,
you know.
What's that? Yeah, so it also creates,
it just sucks when you don't.
Yeah, it creates scenarios whereby leaders of communities and even our president, he might not be able to say, I'm sorry, or I made a mistake, because the vultures will go, gotcha. It's like a catch. Instead of a grace, instead of giving grace to someone, let's say you screwed up with me on something, and you go, hey, dude, I blew it. I'm like, yep, you did, and now I'll be mad at you forever. And it's like, if that was the case, then why would you ever bring your humanness to the table if it's going to be used against you? That's the thing. Like, your humanness is used against you in this society at times. And so then we all have to put up our bullshit masks, not have regret, and never make a mistake. No one wants to admit to a mistake because what? I don't know. The worst case scenario, they end up in family court. I don't know.
Yeah. So, well, I didn't really like get into politics and stuff like, or like really listen or watch a lot about it. It's like recently, not like recent, like in the last 6 months, I'm talking like the last 8 years. And the one thing I always really loved about being the president was like, you can always be this cool example. And like, why can't you just come out and say, hey, like you just mentioned, like, hey, you know what? Yeah, I said this about, you know, being able to, you know, and the one thing that really came out was when the, I guess they're rolling out Obamacare, and he's like, yeah, you can go to your doctor, you can do this. And I was like, it was absolutely false what he was saying. He just shut off the cuff. It was wrong. But if he was able to come back and say, hey, you know what? I wasn't clear on the facts. The way this is rolled out, some plans are going to work, some plans aren't. So some people might actually lose their doctors. I'm sorry. And like you said, it would have been like, whoo, he's sorry. He, you know, he, it's like, can you imagine what would have happened?
Yeah.
You got a guy now who's not a politician. He's not a politician, right? You're not like, you know, a seasoned politician, to say the least. To just come out and say, hey, listen, man, why don't you give me a chance? I've been in this seat for 40-some days, and I'm just getting blasted from all sides. You know, how do you expect me to succeed? And I'm just like, I guess he can't. Well, I don't know. Maybe he can because of the way he communicates, which, by the way, pisses people off. And pisses me off sometimes, but I think it adds it gives a level of transparency to just really get insight on somebody. Like, I'd rather have somebody who's not so polished speaking the truth than some polished bullshitter. Right?
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right. Because maybe we would treat them with some, if they did make a mistake and they did cop to it, maybe we'd be, you know, have a little, grace around it, yeah, or like let the man or the woman back, have a pathway back. I mean, I love humility. I love it. It's just like, it's trust to me. If somebody can go, hey, like if Obama went, you know what, that whole thing about GMOs, I had no clue what I was talking about. You know, I'd be like, wow, I can now start to trust this guy, because now it's not just one lie on top of another and more bullshit, looking good bullshit over the next. You know what I mean? So maybe we're not going to find it, you know, out in the media or the world, but there's places to find it. And thank God there's, like, for me, a men's team, my relationship, my friends, you know, I don't know. You got to, you know, your mother, your father, certain places,
yeah.
Right? It's gold. It's gold when you can recognize it. So, well, that's a little bit about what I'm going through at the moment. But I, you know, of course not, I can't say any details because it's be hold against me.
It's the subject we can't talk about. Or the details we can't talk about.
Right. But the overriding theme does kind of touch in on our topic. You know, we talk about leadership, you know, show about leadership skills, what it takes to be a good leader. And it's amazing because I think, if you want to go there, but I think that's one of the things is humility. Like, someone who's strong in the face of responsibility, strong enough to be humble when something doesn't work. I don't know.
Yeah.
Too much to ask.
Yeah. It's funny. I was doing a guided meditation a couple of days ago, and the theme was humility. And I really for me, like, when I think about it, like, it's the absence of the self. And I was like, holy shit. I'm like, how? I'm like, that concept, I don't know if it was my ego or whatever, man. It's like, how can you just, like, not, I don't know. Just I struggle with it a little bit. And, you know, sometimes my leadership suffers because of that. You know, I don't know if I added a little bit more humble, or if I became more humble, that it would be more effective. You know, I think people have, there's some people, like, we haven't spoken about them in a while, the archetypes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have someone like Gandhi, who's just like a really good, you know, example of a very, very, you know, lover type leader. And then I don't know a lot about her, but, you know, they used to call her the Iron Lady, which was Margaret Thatcher. You know, and she actually was a very stern leader. You know, she was very, you know, I guess if I had to give her an archetype, it would be like a warrior. And it just, you know, if you're a warrior, and then you add, you know, lover to your leadership skills, does it make you more effective, or does it make you less effective? That's a great. That'd be a great. It'd be great. It'd be great having this conversation with Chattini, because he'd be able to mix it all in there. But I'm just saying, you know, like, what kind of, you know, I'm not sure. Do you have a team, or did you ever? Oh, you were a captain at certain points. What type of leader were you, and when you were a, let's say a DC, a division coordinator. Let me see what the word is. A division coordinator for our men's organization. What kind of leader were you?
In terms of archetypes, or just in general?
In general, just like, well, you know, how would you describe yourself as a leader?
I would say passionate, had a vision, but believed I had to do all the work, so was not enrolling or well enough to have just the team doing the work, so I was actually doing some of the manual detail work. But high standards, and this interesting is the qualities that I really appreciate about myself the most, as far as like creativity and having fun. That's just all forget that. That went out the door because I felt like I needed to be part of this, building this foundation of strict warrior-like standards, like building a strong fort and all this fun part. The fun part about being in the division probably, you know, to go by the wayside because I was continually trying to build that with men that, I don't know, I couldn't really reach. So, I mean, so there's what worked, what didn't work, you know, which is part of leadership.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't have fun, but I was definitely learning a lot, and I continue to learn from that experience as time goes by. It's like probably in our organization, just so for listeners in, you know, we're part of a international men's organization where we're just learn about leadership all the time because why? You're a leader when you step up, and you can step up, and we have, Rick and I have. So, but the DC job, you're a DC, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, what did you get out of that? What lessons, anything you could even impart?
Well, the way I led was, the way I led was, I led as a warrior. You know, I led as, you know, I learned in this organization how to enroll men and how to inspire men. So what I was doing was, and I was creating my business and doing certain things. I was like, look, you know, look what can happen if you're committed. Look what can happen if you're in, if you're have integrity. Look what can happen if you, you know, you're willing to do the work. And men were just attracted to that. And I always built good teams around me, and I always relied on them, and I always praised them, and I always managed them well. And I the one good thing is I realized as a leader, I didn't have to do all that little detailed minutia. And that's what really got me. Like I was the greatest before I got into this organization. I was probably the greatest foot soldier. You tell me to, you know, climb that tree and I'll go, yeah, Sergeant, I'll climb that tree and I'll scamp up that tree and try to get as fast as I can and look back and see you smiling at me. And I'll feel so great about it. And from there, men just said, hey, listen, you're a leader. So get out of the ranks and start leading. And that's, you know, I became a team captain. I became part of the core team. And eventually I actually had to like not fight, but like, you know, I had a campaign and like really show up for my election. I won and I had a very successful run as DC, which, you know, I went right from DC to RC in my region. And, yeah, it was, you know, but again, I wasn't a natural born leader, but I just didn't really know it. And my men saw it, but that's how it was. And getting back to like the detail stuff. So that's, what's great. Like now, even in my life, like I don't like doing the small things. So it's either I enroll somebody, and even in my business, I built systems to, you know, to have like the stuff that needs to get done on a day-to-day basis. You know, I pay people to do that, and I have a great team now, and I'm grateful for them. And I don't lead by intimidation or fear. I lead with, you know, inspiration, enrollment, and positive reinforcement.
Yes. I think that's one thing we can really work on. And so anything you can teach on that as far as positive reinforcement, it's something that I have noticed that you do, and it's very much vacant from, I think, the leadership of today. I think everyone's so busy doing their thing that, like, it's just everyone's a cog in the wheel. Like, where's the acknowledgement and the praise and the invisible paychecks? Our organization, MDI, has a lot of work to do to up-level that and really bring that in stronger. And I definitely, in my roles as leaders at times, I was too good at the details. I'm so good at the details, and that's a curse if you fall prey to doing them when you're a leader. A leader has the way I look at it, we kind of talked about it, the leader has the vision, has the purpose, has the drive, points in a direction, and then empowers everyone around him to show them how they are a critical part of making the vision come true. And you set it up so that there's a vision in place. You empower them by not doing it yourself, making sure that they're doing the work that they are good at or that they can learn from. And then and then you make it clear that whatever they're doing adds to the vision's manifestation. And then after all that's done, you continually acknowledge when it's happening. That, to me, is great leadership. And the fact that I could even come up with it tells me that I have the ability just got to stop doing the small shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, like, see, even like in my business, like what that taught me was, it wasn't like, hey, just be a leader and don't do any of the details, you know, just give it all away. It was, if I'm, you know, let me put it, like, if I'm out shoveling snow, like, you know, a big snowstorm and I have all these properties, I'm shoveling snow, you know, I'm not getting taken care of the call or the possible call that might come in for a no heat situation. You know, so it wasn't like, hey, it's beneath you to do these small things. It was, those small things are going to get in the way of what you even said, like the big picture and you know, the creative side. So I really, really hold that. And I got that from the organization. You know, even like I see men, you know, they'll want to do things. They're like, why don't, you know, my partner one time was like, oh, why don't we go do this floor? I said, listen, man, I said, we can do it. I go, we're not experts at it. It's going to take us three times as long. And I said, and while we're doing that, we're not going to be able to go out and raise private money, going to go out and be able to solicit banks to do refinancing for our properties, take a look at our books and make sure that we're, everything's on the right side of the P&L, and also, you know, and then taking care of any, all, you know, all the other leadership stuff, the team service calls, making sure everything's going on. I go, so you get that, right? He goes, yeah, because you know what? I do get that. So that's, you know, it's a good, you know, it's another good example of, you know, the leader doing what the leader should do and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
I think most good leaders will agree on that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because when you get into terms of like leaders versus bosses, now bosses will tell you, here's what you got to do. And if you don't do it, then the consequence is you're gone. I mean, this is underlying, you have to do this, and I'm telling you to do it. Rather than, you know, with a leader, it's like, oh my gosh, look at this incredible place that we all can go. What can you do? What's your part in it? Or, you know, or working with the person to find out what their part is. You know, a lot, totally different, like, energy on that, totally different context of you have to do this versus, wow, what are you able to do that could help the team? I think there's some corporations that actually have learned, like Google, I think Google, I don't know, I've kind of read different things that certain companies have the culture where it's not the boss dictating as much as leaders creating a space for, you know, workers to contribute and feel good about it.
Yeah.
Have you ever, I just noticed, have you ever been part of a, I'm sure you have, I mean, why am I even asking it that way, but as part of MDI, a lot of times we do community service. You know, we'll go out into the community, we'll help, you know, build, you know, houses with that storm that came through, Katrina, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different things that happen. And then, or men will even, like, get together and they'll cook a meal for an event. A lot of activity where men can get together and do some kind of service. Now, have you ever noticed? Maybe I'm projecting. But have you ever noticed when you get in these situations, men show up and they desperately want to feel that they're contributing. They can't just stand there and feel like they're not doing anything, not because they feel bored, but because there's this nature of wanting to contribute. Have you ever noticed that?
When I'm on and in a part of these things, the ones that I've been a part of, yes. But I've also seen a couple men that were okay sitting back and letting, you know, especially when there was like physical labor involved. You know, I've seen a couple men who were just sort of, they would get involved, but they just weren't given the level that everybody else was. And I don't know, maybe I'm just was critical of, you know, how hard I was working and how hard they weren't working. It could have been my best and that could have been their best. But
right.
Yes, I've seen that, but I've also seen the other side of that where, you know, where men have, you know, I feel in a couple instances took the easy road. They were there, they showed up, they did what they felt was enough, and that, you know, and that was it.
Interesting, because I'm just wondering if, again, I might be projecting, but I'm just wondering if we isolated and had a conversation with a man who's maybe loafing it, you know, maybe you could just kind of tell he's like taking it easy, loafing. I'm really wondering if he feels good. Like, oh, good, I'm getting away with this. Or if you really drill down, is it like, yeah, I don't feel that good about it. I want to, you know, I want to be able to do more. I don't know. I'm kind of looking at maybe through rose-colored glasses, like, oh, yeah, everyone wants to contribute so much. Who knows? Maybe there's just lazy shits out there. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, they're, again, but that's, you know, there's all different types of people. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I've seen really good, you know, good men show up for and do good things. And again, some of these events that I'm talking about, they're sort of things that you could have done that. Like we did, we used to do my team every once a month. We used to work with this church and we used to just create a spaghetti dinner in their basement. And anybody who wanted to come, it was free. We'd have spaghetti and meatballs and garlic bread and salad. And, you know, it was tough sometimes getting together a crew of men, you know, to be there and crew of men to strike. And, you know, it was great. It's great when you're there and you're doing it and you're in it because it just feels so cool. You know, but again, it's like, you know, some men are just, you know, they'll give what they can give and that's it. And with things like that too, it isn't sort of like a volunteer. That's what's interesting in our organization. It's a volunteer organization. So that's where I learned how to be enrolling. Like, you know, if you're going to ask a man to take on something that's going to take like 3 hours of his week, every week up until like this project, it's like, you got to be really good at enrolling. And, you know, that gift is so amazing. And, you know, that's the one thing with us, you know, you can't get fired. You know, you get taken out. Some men, you know, will check out and disappear, and you have to take them out. And there's lessons in that too. But that's the one really cool thing about, you know, leading in our organization. There is no pay to it. The only thing is, that, you know, the lessons, the life lessons, and the gratification you get out of it.
Yeah,
and that's what I always enroll them with, because that's you get that.
That's why we're such a. I think the organization's so amazing is that since it is volunteer. Yeah, you will get a lesson in true leadership, not leverage, not control.
Yeah.
It's the perfect petri dish for growing, you know, because of that situation. If I had leverage, like, yeah, I'll fire you if you don't do it. Oh, okay,
yep.
I'll do it. Oh, I've learned so much about enrollment. No, you fucker, you dictator. Like, that's the immature aspect of a so-called leader. The mature,
yeah,
which we've talked about archetypes in the past, you know, the mature leader is someone who, you know, does care about a kingdom and, you know, is going to create a space for the peasants. No, just kidding. Just, you know, the people to have their power. the slaves and the peasants can do the menial work. Anyway, I go back and forth, as you can tell, you know, mature, immature.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, there are examples in history where there was, you know, you can say great leaders, but their greatness came from a huge amount of fear. And, you know, you just can't deny that. You know, it's just, was it the greatest way to lead? No. But were the results, like, ridiculous on how many people they had following them and doing what they wanted them to do?
That's true.
You know, so
yeah,
it's
really leadership. Yeah.
Yeah. I rather lead with the, you know, with enrollment and inspiration. And I feel too that there's just so much more loyalty on the team's end if they really get that you care about them, and you do. You know, it just seems to just work out so much.
Yep.
So much better.
So much better. Good, good, good. Well, looks like we're out of time, Mr. Rick.
Holy
once again,
shit.
Lessons in leadership skills 101. We gave you a few pointers, ladies and gentlemen and ladies, whoever's out there listening in. Hopefully that was helpful and just spur more conversation about what it takes to truly lead people and not control them, dictate to them. That's a big piece. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Facebook. If you just type in "With All Dude Respect," that's D-U-D-E, a couple of dudes. Type that in and follow us on Facebook and get a hold of us there. Another great show, Rick.
Yes. Jimmy. Always, yeah. Quick again, it's the quickest 30 minutes ever. So yeah, great show. I appreciate it, my brother.
Sure. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to all of you soon. Take care. Bye.
Take care.